Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today we are talking to Kim Dakin. She is the founding partner of Voice Into Learning, LLC. She's going to be talking about her new game. That's right, a game called Shift POV. POV is point of view. She talks about how a group or organization can shift a problem into a solution. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave.
You know, it's interesting. You know, we've been talking about a lot of different things on this show in the last year, and one of the things we've talked about quite a bit is how an individual learns, how an individual comes together. And one of the things that we're talking about here is your process or game that you've come together having to do with Shift POV. Can you explain what Shift POV is? Can you explain the overview of it? And then we'll get into the history of kind of how this all came together.
Sure. Shift POV is an active, interactive game structure. It's designed to take a group from conflict into collaboration in an hour. That's the goal, and that's what I've been developing. My impetus for this is both in my work in nonprofits and in my contracting work with a number of organizations and corporations. I've come to see that groups in conflict provide a lot of obstacles for proactive collaboration and just problem solving in general. And that largely, people don't know how to deal with it if it becomes intractable. And I started getting curious about this when I worked for a nonprofit that was going through a high degree of change, needed change, that had been put off for a fair amount of time. And just watching the dynamics that came into play around our own relationship to change and the fear that it put into place and people's reactions around that. Ultimately, long story short, we got a new executive director who did manage to put us through the paces that we needed to bring the organization together, but it cost about 6 to 9 months of productivity. And I started to wonder if there was a way to bring that process into the workplace in such a way that it could compress that time frame and in a way that made all sides feel heard and respected and invested in the game plan going forward.
Just to be clear, POV stands for?
Point of view.
Point of view, right. So we're shifting somebody's point of view on an intransient person who might not be willing to make a change, correct?
Yes. So the game works on two premises. That the notion of change implements a lot of fear in a workplace, which then makes people less able to move forward for a number of reasons. They start getting in defensive positions. They stop listening to each other. Once fear moves into a workplace and something called the binary begins to take place, and my notion of a binary is when you start to split an issue or a possible way forward into black and white or good or bad, right and wrong, and people get emotionally attached to one side or the other, then it becomes really difficult to make progress. So this is a game that really actively addresses the binary and starts to dismantle our perceptions and sometimes our habitual perceptions of each other so that we literally have to step into the other point of view, articulate it, and then, in the third round, come to some sort of meeting of the mind so that the group can move forward towards collaboration. I think probably it would be a good idea for me to just to describe the sequence of the game.
Yeah, that would probably be helpful in terms of getting the audience to understand the process by which it works.
And it's a very visual game, so I'll do my best to do it justice with simple words. At the onset, participants in groups of between 6 and 15 people per group are asked to pick a point of view card relative to an issue. So going into a particular issue, they will pick a card that means either an activator, skeptic, or on the fence relative to the action that's being proposed. So an activator would be largely in favor of whatever this action is. Skeptics would be largely opposed. On the fence, they're torn in both directions. So those are the starting viewpoints. The facilitator will list what's known about an issue, in a known and agreed upon about an issue, on the board, or whiteboard, PowerPoint, whatever. And then he or she will ask for everyone to state their point of view in sort of a round robin around the table. Also, they will be encouraged to write down reasons for their point of view going into the game. Then the facilitator will prime the first round discussion with a few questions. And that part of the discussion will proceed for a timed session of between 10 and 15 minutes. At the end of that session, people will again be asked to write down where they are, what they've heard, because in the second round, they will be asked to engage the issue from the opposite point of view. So a skeptic will now become an activator for the second round, and vice versa. Those who listed themselves on the fence will be encouraged at the beginning of the first round to pick one side or the other as a way to simply test what feels best to them in the articulation of both sides. So the third round, the second round will be timed for between 10 and 15 minutes. And then the third round will start on what has been gained in the first two rounds. The facilitator's job is to track any sort of pivot points, any kind of discoveries, any questions that come up that could be addressed in the third round. So the third round can go either way. And again, that round does not necessarily need to be timed, but we're trying to keep it to an hour or less. So timing in all of these rounds is critical. Now, between rounds, there is another deck of cards in the center of the table called the random factors. Random factors are designed as insight prompts to get people away from the discussion, focused on something completely different for just 60 seconds worth of time. And the reason why this is important in trying to scope out and problem solve on an issue is because you can gain different perspectives simply by engaging whatever's on the card for 60 seconds worth of time. There are three suits in the random factors: actions, questions, and observations, 15 cards apiece. So insight prompts, they've got questions like, are you solving the right problem? Or whose opinion here do you value the most and why? Or have you spoken up too much, too little, just right? Or some of the actions are things like get up, run around the room, and sit back down. So they are designed to push the comfort zone just a little bit to get people away from the table. They can engage some of these questions silently, or they can engage them as a group, depending on which direction the facilitator wants to go.
So the intention here is to get the group to start moving forward in a process, right? To be able to move forward in a process and to discuss what it is the issue is, and try to move in a direction that comes to some consensus.
Exactly. And also to be open to surprises and new input along the way. It's very important from the beginning of round one that the facilitator do the best they can to establish some safe space. And that depends on the needs and the character of the actual working team itself. I've done a little work on the random factors and sent out some surveys focused on this particular element of the game itself. Just getting some clarity from people who work with specific groups on a consistent basis about how they would characterize the nature of their particular group, some of the characteristics that they would hope for being present in that group, and some of the obstructions to those elements being hoped for. For instance, some of the characteristics that came up most in the surveys in terms of established groups were that they were conservative, wedded to history, tentative about authentic engagement. So some of the hoped-for qualities would be more risk-taking, for more solution-oriented input, discussions that are off the surface and more in-depth. And some of the obstacles that come up around that are the constant need to vie for status and control, a sense of entitlement, punitive measures subtly undertaken for authentic engagement. So when you're entering into a situation like that with a group that has those kinds of things already in place in the culture, you need something sharper, more interactive, and engaging in order to move a group quickly from a place of stasis into one that can be more open to new ideas.
We're talking with Kim Dakin. She's the founding partner of Voice Into Learning, and we are talking with her about a game that she has produced, which is called Shift POV. And it is used by a number of large organizations and small organizations to try to shift from problem solving into actual solutions when there is an impediment. You know, Kim, it's interesting. One of the things that you talked about here is about people who may be on the fence, right? Somebody down the middle. And, you know, when we're talking about shifting minds, how does this game get people to understand that consensus is really a good way of going? Because sometimes people get really entrenched and they really don't want to hear it at times.
Oh, yeah, I would say oftentimes they really don't want to hear it, particularly if they're in an intractable position where they feel like they're not hearing any new input that's going to change them one way or the other. This is all same old, same old, and everything starts to become predictable. I know, you know, if I interject this particular point, Carl across the table is going to roll his eyes. He always rolls his eyes. And we start to become kind of stuck in our lens and our viewpoint about our working partners, which starts the process on our part of shutting down. And I also want to say at this juncture, if this sort of dynamic is in place too long, a business can start to lose valued engagement on the part of their employees. And people who are the best and the brightest will start to lose their commitment to a particular business. And, you know, start to do mental walkabout, looking for other opportunities. So if this sort of binary and intractable conflict is in place too long within the working team, it can be extremely costly.
Well, you know, people sometimes have one-on-one issues, right, with one individual.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Does this game play for a one-on-one? You're talking about teams, but does it play for a one-on-one issue or a one-on-one concern, or are we really talking about kind of mediation at that point?
I would say it does address one-on-one concerns. One of the reasons I developed the game was not just because I was understanding this kind of intrinsically in the workplace, but also the family dynamic that can be in place can also be highly toxic and costly. You know, if my sister and myself, which have had a fairly fractious history, find ourselves in a position where we have to make decisions about what to do with mom, then all of our interpersonal stuff is going to come into play around this. Unless we can find a way to really step up to the plate, set our differences aside, and keep the larger question and problem that needs to be addressed front and center. And this is a game that can help people do that, whether those people are in families, in relationships, or in businesses. And one of the primary means of doing that is the requirement in the second round that I step into the opposite point of view and engage that issue from that point of view. That means I need to have deeply listened in the first round to the valid points the other side has made. And also I have to be willing to engage them and articulate them. If I am not either of those two things, that's going to be painfully obvious in the second round. So part of the facilitator's job at the initial start of the game is to make that clear. And you mentioned the on-the-fence position. On-the-fence is a highly creative, or can be a highly creative place to be, holding both and. But it's also extremely comfortable for people who don't necessarily want to commit themselves one way or the other, because the workplace dynamic can be costly if you commit yourself to one side or the other, especially if it's high stakes. If you commit yourself to the activators and they turn out to be wrong or costly or everything falls apart, then there you are. You've allied with the wrong side. So asking on the fence to take one or the other point of view in the first round is key to get those people off the fence and participating. However, the flip side of on the fence is, in a way, by the third round, you want to have moved the entire group to the more creative aspects of on the fence, because you're, by the third round, hopefully, the majority of people in the group are able to see both sides of the issue and have entertained some interesting possibilities within the first two rounds.
No, I mean, this is obviously something that is very important to organizations to move things forward, to dynamics and teams, as well as departments. We're talking with Kim Dakin, and she's the founding partner of Voice Into Learning at voiceintolearning.com. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB and presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Kim Dakin. She is the founding partner of VoiceIntoLearning.com, and she is talking to us about this wonderful game called Shift POV, POV meaning point of view, in which individuals and or teams get together, and they talk about how to get collaboration going when there is a sticking point, when something isn't working. You know, Kim, we've talked in the first segment here about the process, kind of how somebody goes through it, and you kind of mentioned the impetus of why you kind of made this happen. What's your background? What you know, why did you bring this forward? Where did you see this as the reason for it? How did this come about?
Well, I have a theater performance background. I did a lot of that in my 20s in New York City. And while I was there, I got an opportunity to work with a hospital. One of the concerns that they were addressing was there was a medical school, and they were concerned with the fact that they were churning out doctors who had an intense amount of data and content expertise, but were starting to lose their facility to actually engage with patients. So when I moved to Maine here, this became a primary focus for me. I developed a company early on called Short Fuse Interactive, whose primary objective was bringing theater skills and presentation expertise into the workplace. We started to get a lot of work doing the mandated sexual harassment training that was going on around the state. We could provide an interactive, engaging alternative to sticking people in front of the video that they've already seen 5 years in a row. And we then started expanding out from there into hostile workplace environment. We did a lot of sales training. And I started to see that the aha moments that were happening in the audience were really beneficial and gratifying. And we got a lot of repeat business. Of course, then the recession happened and training budgets were cut. I went to graduate school and got my degree in adult education. And I started to rethink this whole game plan and began to see through another opportunity I had to present at ATD that if I could make the principles of change and collaboration active, engaging, and provide a vehicle where people could actually role play different points of view, that could be exponentially more powerful and more cost-effective for the organizations I'd be working with.
One of the things you've mentioned here is that it is a process, right? Someone starts this. Or first of all, let's start with the beginning. It really has to be that someone is willing and wants to be able to collaborate, right? Doesn't it start with a mindset that at least you have to be willing to start the process?
Yes. It definitely does, and oftentimes that's the hardest hurdle. There are workplaces that are open to engaging this sort of training tool, but they're largely organizations that understand the need for getting their work teams in a space of collaboration and problem solving. They understand the nuances of the business environment and the need for accelerated vehicles that can help implement and take a group from one mental position to another quickly. We're all short on time, and it seems as if that time crunch can either be an obstacle or it can start to really be a catalyst for bringing about change quickly and efficiently.
Well, it's really, you know, one of the things that I've always said when somebody is stuck is that it is helpful to have somebody unstick you. It's very hard to unstick yourself. It just is.
It is. Yes, you know, absolutely.
It's no different than being, you know, wedged in a rock with your foot. And
that is right.
You know, it's nice that you keep on trying to keep pulling at it and you try to figure it out. But, you know, it's helpful when someone can come along and can see what you can't see from the other side of the rock, right?
Exactly. And that's why this is a game that appeals to facilitators, conflict mediators. They are largely people who've got a distance from whatever dynamic is actually taking place in the group. So they are the primary movers and shakers for bringing in a tool such as this. And yes, there's always energies within a group. They're just, hell no, we won't go. And so oftentimes I have found in my own work that if you can engage this side to become articulate about their reasons for why they are drawing such definitive lines around things, then the group starts to understand and can start to figure out ways to address the validity of their concerns going forward. Sometimes that's all we need to know. That's all we need to get, is that I am being heard here. So even if the ultimate direction does not go my way, the fact that I have been respectfully listened to and someone has articulated my point of view back to me, I can feel settled in an internal place. So I don't have to be so defensive, hostile, and conflicted going forward.
No, I mean, I think that's the key, right? I mean, look, yeah, people just want to be heard. It's, you know, it's one thing to be told one thing to do, and it's another thing to be at least listened to before you're told what to do.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, that's just the reality.
It's huge.
It is. It's a big difference between the two.
So this is a structure that offers an opportunity for authentic engagement. The timing of the discussion rounds means that everybody's got to step up to the plate energetically. You've got to be clean and clear. We can't allow everything to go off into personal tangents, or you're not going to get through the first part of the discussion efficiently. So if everyone knows that and can step up to the plate, then that's a great way to start the discussion. And you had asked a little bit ago about putting forward an example. I helped a small new company engage in policy around bringing dogs into the space. The majority of this company were in their 20s and 30s. They were single people. They had dogs that they loved, who they felt, you know, personally contributed to their own working energies. But there were other people in this particular space that were opposed to having dogs in the space. This went on for a number of months. People had dogs in the space. The people who were not comfortable with it sort of sat on their feelings. They didn't want to be labeled as dog haters. But it was starting to become a problem. And the woman who was managing the space finally figured out that she needed to address this. So one of the first sessions that I used this tool in was to directly see if I could help this workplace come up with a dog policy. And it was really fascinating because the stories that came up for people who had issues around dogs had never been put into the space before and were deeply heard by the people who were owning the dogs and wanted to put them into the workspace. So, and then they then had to articulate that same side in a way that was authentic and engaged. And by the end of the third round, people were starting to come up with ideas about, well, if we have one segment of the workplace that is dog-friendly, would that work out? And if we put rules in place where they have to be voice-trained and crate-trained, would that be acceptable? And after a while, they were able to create a policy that addressed both sides. And it was really gratifying to watch this group move from point A to point B, deeply listening and starting to become able to put together some interesting ideas to move the group forward toward policy that is still in place today.
No, I think that's a great, because that articulates a great example of how this process can work. I mean, dogs at work is a something that is happening more and more in the workplace. We're seeing more allowing pets in general.
Yep.
And this is an example of where you do sometimes have camps, the ones that are animal lovers and ones that that are not animal haters, but they just don't know enough about it, right? They just
have fears
about it.
Unless it's talked about, the animal lovers can start to label those who don't want dogs in the space as animal haters. And then the binary moves in.
That's
and
right.
Pretty soon people stop listening
right.
to each other
That's
or engaging
right.
each other. And that can bleed into
other things.
Times when they have to work together.
That's right. That's right. No, there's no question that, you know, we all come with our biases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our personal biases, our own,
you
know, internal biases. And I know people will say that that's not right to say, but the fact is that's fact. Everybody has a bias.
That's exactly right.
Have a perception of whatever it is that no matter when you see it, first time you see it, you make a snap, instant judgment. It's just the way it is.
Well, it is. It's human behavior. You don't get to be a grown-up in our culture without having those sort of biases in place. Absolutely. But one of the other benefits of this game that I want to make sure I mention is that people have come away in the survey saying, I now realize that my default position, no matter what the discussion is going to err on the side of skepticism for reasons that I really didn't know about before I went through this game. For one thing, it's easy to be a skeptic to some degree because the burden of proof is on the promoters of the change. All I have to do is sit back and say no, or where's your proof? Where's your data? And it starts to be really comfy.
Absolutely. Really, it's easier to, like, to say no than say yes. It's much
easier to say no.
And
some of the surveys, there was one guy in the surveys, I think it was a guy, who said, you know, I started to have fun with it after a while. How many holes can I poke in this argument? You know, how many more things can I, how many more hoops can I demand that the activators jump through? And you can start to see how this dynamic plays out across our culture. So I thought that was really a key learning on this guy's part that he will take into his next discussion an awareness of his default position. And we all have them relative to change in general or specific kinds of changes. It's an interesting opportunity for people to also get to know their own group persona in a way that they perhaps hadn't been able to before.
We've been talking with Kim Dakin. She is the founding partner of VoiceIntoLearning.com or Voice Into Learning LLC. We've been talking about a game that she created, Shift POV, and it has been exciting and interesting to learn exactly how it can be used during this segment. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
If you'd like to be a guest on the HR Power Hour or be a show sponsor, send David an email today at info@hrpowerhour.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com. And today we're talking with Kim Dakin, and she is the founding partner of Voice Into Learning, LLC, of voiceintolearning.com. Kim, we talked about the first half, and we talked about the new game that you've created called Shift POV, but you do a lot of other things. But before we start talking about the different trainings that we're going to talk about today, I kind of wanted to know your thoughts in terms of what you're seeing in the market today in terms of training itself. You know, you mentioned in the last segment that during 2008, 2009, of course, everybody had cut their training budgets. You know, it's just how everybody went during the recession. We cut training out, even though I would argue that's the wrong thing to do. But that's what happened. Are you seeing organizations now putting money back into training, development of their teams and organizational groups?
Yes. I think they're seeing the need for training, but I believe it's taken a different turn in that so many teams are now working virtually. So now, along with the other challenges that are in place, just getting teams to collaborate face-to-face, now the challenge is exponential in that teams are being asked to work across time zones and geographic distance. So much of training is now being launched online. And a part of my vision for Shift is to develop an online version of it. Probably within the next 9 months, we'll be going in that direction. And I think this is an exciting field. It's fraught with all kinds of, there's a degree of resistance to this from many people who were versed in traditional training. But I think that for many companies, it just makes more sense financially. However, there's a statistic out there that says that 66% of the work that virtual teams put in place is not satisfactory to the client. So clearly, there's a lot of work that needs to be done getting virtual teams to really step up and produce to their capacity.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting moment. We're seeing trends to virtual work, and certainly people working from home and working from anywhere across the country and globe. There's no question, right? I mean, that's just the trends that's out there. And you do lose a little bit of the culture that holds a team together, that all are in one place or all within a couple locations. And it does change that. And so when you are training and dealing with issues or concerns or problems or things that arise, you don't have that that glue, right? That sticky glue of people who know one another and are related to one another in a work-type way. And, and so people are less likely to move and shift initially, at least, initially.
Initially. I mean, You can say that you lose a certain amount of the cultural glue that's already in place in a physical workplace, but you could also say that you then have the capacity and the possibility of creating your own glue within the virtual team. And as long as the facilitator of a virtual team realizes the need for that and puts things in place in the very beginning, then this virtual group can start to create their own collaborative workspace culture. But it takes intentionality. It can't be assumed. And I think that's what business is starting to realize.
No, I think you're right. I think the other thing that we're talking about in terms of training, and again, wondering in terms of what you're seeing in the marketplace today, we're seeing in certain areas that some companies have gone to outsourcing a lot of their different functions, and others are trying to bring it in more, right? Tighten it up. I use recruiting as an example. In the recruiting world, right now the trend is to kind of bring recruiters in and try to bring it in-house a little more because, the recruiting is on the upswing. With training on the upswing, are you seeing corporate trainers being in more demand? Are you seeing more of organizations going out and trying to outsource this instead, or both?
I think it depends on the company culture and their resources, frankly. I would say that largely in the place that we live here in the Northeast, depending on the company, people are trying to switch the focus of their training teams towards addressing more virtual teams and also getting people to teach and train in a way that facilitates people to embrace change. You can teach people a certain software, for example, but you have to teach those tools knowing that that software is going to go through several different evolutions of change, meaning you've got to also change a certain amount, you've got to train a certain amount of flexibility. And that goes directly to adult learning principles and continued lifelong learning, if you will. It's like, how do you train people to stay flexible and open, curious and engaged and excited about the new stuff that's coming down the pike? Again, our resistance to the new, the different, any sort of change is going to is going to prove an impediment. So I think oftentimes it's a mindset shift that needs to be put into training. And I think businesses are starting to realize this.
The other part that I would ask in terms of overall trends is the generational change between Y and Gen Z. Of course, it's now entering the workplace. And the baby boomers and Xers that are out there. And there is a tremendous difference between their thinking when it comes to training. There's no question about that. What are you seeing currently? Our company is having to adjust to have two sets of trainings to make sure they're maximizing their potential to each group. Or how are you seeing that trend?
I think it's interesting. Younger generations coming into the workplace are providing companies with the opportunity to really look at the most important elements of their workplace culture and how that impacts their training expertise. So millennials coming in are used to learning things in a certain way. They don't necessarily need face-to-face engagement. They're used to a certain amount of computer interaction that's just part of their lifestyle. It's assumed. And so if we're going to train people in their 20s and 30s, we're going to have to embrace a certain amount of computer games, interaction, make it fun, make it interesting, make it fast. There are certain things that need to be in place for generations who have this sort of language in their learning lexicon in order to keep them there. I think that there are challenges with millennials coming in to play, but they also offer an intense amount of engagement in another venue that perhaps older generations are not as facile with.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of mentoring between, obviously, Gen Y and baby boomers because they bring a tech-savvy and multitasking ability that the older generation only dreamed about. And, and yet they don't have the experience, of course, and having seen it all that the baby boomers has. And it's an interesting dichotomy between the two.
That's right. And they also tend to be a bit more... Well, they're a little lighter in the people skills department. So much of their engagement is online, and oftentimes when asked to work in a group that requires a bit more depth in communication, they can get themselves in trouble as well. So the mentoring piece that you just mentioned, it becomes really key. You know, how do I engage with so-and-so? Every time I talk to her, she never makes eye contact with me. She seems to shut down, and I know I'm not getting her best, most authentic engagement. What can I do?
No, so, it's huge. That's a huge piece of today. No question about that.
Yeah. So that's where game structures can start to appeal to younger groups, younger workers, who are maybe not so resistant, not so prone to perhaps eye-rolling, oh, goody, you know, another game of the week or flavor of the month as far as training games are concerned. Younger people tend to embrace these sorts of things a little more readily because they're already in their learning lexicon.
No, you're absolutely right. We're talking with Kim Dakin. She is the founding partner of Voice Into Learning, LLC. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB and presented by CMA Career. voiceintolearning.com. Today we've been talking with Kim Dakin. She is the founding partner of Voice Into Learning LLC at voiceintolearning.com. We've been talking about a lot of topics. In the last segment, we talked about training trends across the Northeast and across the country. And today, this last segment, we're going to be talking about some general overall trainings that she also has that she can perform, as well as some events that are happening in the area. So, Kim, let's first talk about some of the other trainings you do. I went to your site, voiceintolearning.com, and some of the things they talk about here, and I'll just throw out a couple, are power presentation training, storytelling, make a musical in a day, interesting, activating scenes, stress management, I could use that, and then challenges in the workplace from he said, she said, and customer focus. Let's take a couple of these. We obviously won't have time to go through them all, and certainly anybody can go to hrpowerhour.com after the show, and they can get a link directly to where Kim's organization is. You'll see her picture, her bio, and all that good stuff. But Kim, tell me a little bit about the trainings and how they differ from some other training organizations out there.
Well, the nature of my work is a very deep focus on interactivity and engagement. We try to bring training off the page, away from the PowerPoint, and into bodies, hearts, minds, and souls. So the training packages that we produce are highly engaging and erected. Maybe, you know, there's an hour-long format, there's half day, but they really promise to get people deeply engaged in ways that are surprising and often fun. We have noticed that coming away from a training, the surveys that people that we get back from the people who have hired us are extremely enthusiastic, and often we get repeat business simply because we are able to prove to be a catalyst for discussion into topics that really require authentic engagement. I'll use an example, our He Said, She Said, which is a program that directly applies to sexual harassment. We really stay away, again, from the black and white victim, bully, binary, and we get into the issues of perception, which play a huge role in that particular issue. So we look at the same scenario. We play it out twice from her point of view, from his point of view, and then we get the audience engaging on what they see and giving us suggestions about the behaviors that, or the words that need to be said so that she doesn't perceive that, and the way she needs to hear what he just said so that she doesn't need to feel a particular way. We really get into the dynamics and nuance of personal communication in this situation in particular, which can be so heated, spiral out of control, and be ultimately extremely costly for an organization.
Well, that's the bottom line at the end of the day, right? Because training has to have an ROI, and a CFO or CEO speaks a different language sometimes than trainers or HR professionals. I say it all the time. They have to understand that there's a cost behind everything, and training is a cost. The benefit has to be there, but sometimes it takes time. So you have to be able to deliver a return on investment or an ROI or an ROT, if you want to say return on training, to make sure that people understand that it is really about soft skills sometimes that they have to develop and learn that can move productivity forward. And so, you know, from this particular standpoint, it's about delivering something that's interactive and making people understand that it's not just one day of training. It's a change of a behavior for a period of time after that as well.
That's right. One of the other things we offer is a series called Trust on the Run. One of the costs of so much of the changing dynamic in a workplace is the erosion of trust. If I have to work with someone who's located in another country, I've never met them, maybe I've heard them, but mostly we've just been interacting online, there's a part of me that is not really clearly going to be able to trust this person. I haven't looked into their eyes, I haven't heard their story, I haven't been engaged this way. So unless we can engage, we we can't really build authentic trust between ourselves. Part of what we do in the trust building is to get people to deeply hear, listen, and speak their stories, and to get us thinking about how we listen to those stories. There's a wonderful structure called heart, head, and feet, which are three lenses through which we listen to stories. Heart is sort of self-explanatory. I'm listening for relationships. I'm listening for emotions. I'm listening for impact. Head is also self-explanatory. I'm listening for content, data, numbers, facts, and figures. And feet, I'm listening for what's the action I can take to help bring about a beneficial outcome.
No, you're absolutely right. Because, and that's the key at the end. Are you going to actually do something with the information you've taken in?
That's right.
And that really makes the difference. You know, we're here. It's April 18th here, Saturday, April 18th. You are going to be speaking at the Maine HR Conference, which, by the way, so am I. I'm going to be doing a topic up there as well, so it's awesome.
Right.
That's going to be happening on May 4th through 8th. You're going to be at the Maine HR Conference doing a presentation and product trial, I understand. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
That's great. And which day do you speak on?
The very first day.
Oh, so right on Tuesday.
That's right. Right on
Tuesday.
That's
great. That's great. Any other events happening after that?
At this juncture, we have a couple of proposals in to conflict mediation that's happening up here in Bowdoin. I don't know if we'll be accepted, but we're certainly on their radar. And I'm also going to do a couple more product trials for some invited people who have expressed a lot of interest but haven't been able to make any of the other ones we've done.
No, that's great. Well, Kim, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. Again, Kim Dakin, founding partner of VoiceIntoLearning.com, VoiceIntoLearning LLC. I appreciate you coming on and sharing with me this information.
Thank you so much, Dave.
And now your HR tip of the week. Multi-generational workforce. The new generation is Gen Z. Unlike Gen X and millennials, Gen Z hasn't generated too much press yet. But they're entering the job market in force now. Generation Z is typically recognized as beginning with those born in the mid-1990s, who are now reaching the age where they are likely to be heading to college and or starting their first full-time jobs. So, do you know about Gen Z? If you don't, it's time to check it out because it's the new generation and something you need to be aware of. That's your HR Tip of the Week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, Laura Lavovich of the Career Strategy Group will be talking about her new book, 100 Conversations for Career Success. Laura started out as a resume writer and now has a team of resume writing professionals in the Metro DC area. She's going to be talking about this book, You Get to Learn from the Best. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.